This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
For strategic planning and a music series at Miller Outdoor Theater. I believe the board's job is to create a vision, establish policy, and form partnerships, not micromanagement or rules for rules' sake. I have work and academic experience in nonprofit management, finance, city planning, and the performing and visual arts. KPFT is my link to the truth and the blues, to diverse communities and points of view, and to a family of people who share my fears and hope for the planet. Please vote for me, Susan Young, and please vote in this board election. It's important.
This is 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Walensky.
And Jennifer Renee.
I'm Deborah Bell.
And I'm Greg Chapman.
And Glenn Holt.
And tonight's show, we'll be talking to members of the Lesbian Health Initiative about health fair that will be held this Saturday, November 4th, at the Legacy Service Clinic. Greg Chapman hosts a segment discussing gay men and their association with Wicca and other pagan spiritualities. Queer Voices special correspondent, Joan Devlin hosts two special Halloween segments. Somehow I think we've been here before. She will be interviewing Peter Alachi, a local author from Salem, Massachusetts, who will discuss the issues of witchcraft and feminism as influenced by the TV show none other than Bewitched.
Yes.
And a second interview with author Jill Marie, a bisexual woman who maintains a 10-year correspondence with Agnes Moorehead in her book called With Every Good Wish, Agnes Moorehead and Me. And, of course, This Way Out news event and much, much more. But what we really need to talk about tonight,
well, this is what we need to talk about, because this is a special show, and it's especially scary because it's our trick-or-treat. Ooh, it's very scary, Greg. Oh, Jennifer, let me tell you. First of all, Glenn is dressed like Martha Wong. That's pretty scary.
That's scary.
That is scary. Because he looks just like her.
Jack, Shelley, Shakula, Gibbs. Greg looks just like Hickey Freeman.
And you do.
And Jennifer.
Yes.
That is a great Tom DeLay outfit.
Oh, thank
and
you.
And, of course, I'm
you better hold on
the
to your
scariest
purse.
Of them all, George W.
Does it get any scarier than
no,
that?
No,
it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
You do that so well.
Yeah. The thing.
I saw you on TV today. You were down there in Sugarland talking.
Well, actually, because I was down there.
You were behind him on the stage, one of those people making the faces and agreeing with him. That is scary.
No, actually, he's causing trouble for us tonight because Ellie can't be here because she can't get in from Sugarland to
you
be on
really?
The show. Yeah. So I said, well, don't worry about it.
Did they round her up? I mean, you know, I know how Bush would be all hold the...
I don't know. The polls look really good.
That's scary. I'm scared that the polls look that good.
I got a card one time, and I just love it. It said, you know, this is the time of year when really scary-looking people come to your door and knock on your door, and you open your door, and they say, I want your vote.
Trick or treat.
Yeah. But we're doing our own trick or treat here at KPFT because it is Pledge Drive.
Yes.
And it's not just, you're still going to be treated to great programming. There's no tricks about that. But we are asking you to support Queer Voices, to support the other programs that are here on KPFT. You can do that now and enjoy this special Halloween edition by calling
713-526-5738.
Or?
Oh, 713-526-KPFT.
And we have our lovely volunteers sitting by the phone, anxiously awaiting your call.
And please call, because the equipment here is very scary.
We need chairs.
Not only
we desperately
chairs.
Need
yeah. chairs. Yes.
Chairs in the studio.
Well, you know, we can make our goal and we still may not get any
this
chairs.
This is true. This is true.
But actually,
if you have any chairs out there you'd like to donate.
Like desk chairs. Yes. Office chairs. That's what we need.
But, KPFT is working on some improvements. They're getting a new transmitter.
They're
increasing the power, which is great because sometimes...
That's electrifying.
They got another gerbil.
To run in the wheel.
And it, certainly you understand that the utility bills go up, and KPFT's utility bills, because of running those transmitters, are much higher than most people probably realize. The talent is cheap, as we...
Obviously.
Well, we're reasonable anyway.
But there's a lot of things that KPFT needs just to keep on going and to bring some of the really important voices that we have. And not only us, the fact that we're able to come on the show, and the one thing they do is they don't tell us what to put on the show. Of course, nobody tells Deborah what to do.
Yes, they do. I just don't do it.
You just don't listen, do you?
I listen. I just don't obey.
Oh.
Okay. But that's the really neat thing about KPFT, that we're able to come on and do a show.
They even let me in. That's right.
Talk about the issues. And, with these exceptions of a few times a year that we ask for you to call in and support the station, pretty much we don't run commercials. You know, if you listen to commercial radio, it's like every couple minutes they're running more commercials. It was just amazing. Today, in the old days, I worked in commercial radio, and there used to be this thing that you didn't run a competitor right next to a competitor. And I was watching the news the other day, and they ran four car commercials back-to-back for different cars. Who remembers that? But, they just keep on going, and they make it worse, and people don't watch it. But KPFT is a very special... In fact, we don't even take any corporate money.
But we would if they gave it to us.
That's
not exactly true, because some of our listeners work for corporations
that do
matching funds. So if you are an employee of said kind of company and you make a pledge of $35, then your company gives $35, and that makes $70 for KPFT. If you give $100, they give $100. That's $200 for KPFT. So we encourage you to check with your company to find out if they do that. And let's give the number one more time before we go to news wrap from this way out.
It's 713-526-KPFT.
713-526-KPFT. Call now.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Kareem Ferguson.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 28, 2006. Lesbian and gay couples in the U.S. state of New Jersey celebrated a legal victory of sorts this week. Close, but no marriage cigars, at least not yet. By a 4-3 vote, the state Supreme Court ruled on October 25th that same-gender couples are entitled to the same marriage rights and responsibilities as heterosexual couples. But the majority ruling left it to the New Jersey legislature to decide what to call those unions. Denying committed same-sex couples the financial and social benefits and privileges given to their married heterosexual counterparts bears no substantial relationship to a legitimate governmental purpose, the majority opinion said. Citing the Equal Protection Clause in the New Jersey Constitution, the decision concluded that committed same-sex couples must be afforded on equal terms the same rights and benefits enjoyed by opposite-sex couples under the civil marriage statutes. But it continued, the name to be given to the statutory scheme that provides full rights and benefits to same-sex couples, whether marriage or some other term, is a matter left to the democratic process. The court ordered the legislature to either amend the marriage statutes or enact an appropriate statutory structure within 180 days of the date of its decision. The three dissenting justices said they did so because the ruling didn't go far enough and should have specified marriage as the legal remedy to discrimination against lesbian-gay couples.
The New Jersey ruling parallels a 1999 High Court verdict in Vermont that led that state legislature to create civil unions, which all but in name provide same-gender couples with equal legal marriage rights in the state. On the one hand, not a single justice said same-sex couples are unworthy of equal protection, Stephen Goldstein of New Jersey's Garden State Equality wrote in an email to supporters. On the other hand, we did not get marriage equality. Marriage is the only currency of commitment the real world universally accepts, he continued. Contraption short of marriage, like civil unions and domestic partnerships, do not provide the same protections. Thus, we do not have a win yet. And, he wrote, it's now up to us to make it happen. He later told a post-ruling rally that he would fight for full marriage equality until there is blood on these knuckles. On the campaign trail for his embattled Republican Party, U.S. President George W. Bush predictably condemned the New Jersey justices. We had another activist court issue a ruling that raises doubts about the institution of marriage, he said. Echoing previous comments, he called marriage a sacred institution that is critical to the health of our society and the well-being of families, and it must be defended. Both conservative, anti-queer religious groups and many in the Republican Party are privately celebrating the New Jersey High Court ruling. They're hoping it will mobilize the same voter base in the upcoming midterm elections that swarmed voting booths in 2004 to pass several state constitutional amendments outlawing legal recognition of same-gender couples and re-elect George W. Bush and the GOP-controlled Congress.
New Jersey Democratic Assemblyman Reed Goscoria is one of several lawmakers who promised to sponsor a bill giving same-gender couples the right to marry, with no separate name or lesson privileges. Full marriage equality merely answers the call of the Supreme Court, he said. But many Republican legislators denounced the ruling, and one vowed to try to impeach the justices, an unlikely event. Republican Assemblyman Guy Gregg promised to introduce a bill to amend the state constitution to define marriage as a union between a man and a woman. He admitted it had little chance of passage, but claimed the public, which must vote on proposed constitutional amendments approved by the legislature, would support it. Democratic State Senator Ray Lesniak told reporters that lawmakers will support the equal rights of same-gender couples ordered by the court, but he predicted the Democratic-controlled legislature would stop short of applying the term marriage to lesbian and gay unions. More than 40 U.S. states have laws defining marriage as a union between a man and a woman. Nearly 20 have written the definition into their constitutions, and voters in eight more states have same-gender marriage ban amendments on their November 7th ballots.
Meanwhile, the Washington State Supreme Court is standing by its ruling denying gay and lesbian couples the right to marry. Same-gender couples had asked the justices to reconsider their July 5-4 decision upholding Washington's Defense of Marriage Act. The majority ruling validated that 1998 state law limiting marriage to heterosexual couples in order to promote and encourage stable families. The court's refusal to review that ruling, signed by Chief Justice Jerry Alexander this week, is the final word in the case. Equality activists can't make a federal case out of it because no federal legal issues were involved. The High Court rarely reconsiders its rulings, and few observers expected it to revisit a decision that took nearly 18 months to announce. Washington marriage equality supporters said the denial was particularly disheartening because it came on the same day New Jersey's Supreme Court ruled. As Lisa Stone, director of the Northwest Women's Law Center, which represented the plaintiffs in the case, told reporters, just as the New Jersey court recognized the discrimination that gays and lesbians face and said they're entitled to be treated the same, our court essentially declined to do that. Massachusetts is, of course, the only U.S. state where full legal marriage is open to gay and lesbian couples. The U.S. federal government refuses to recognize legal same-gender marriages, domestic partnerships, or civil unions anywhere in the country.
South Africa's Human Rights Commission has criticized the Mbeki government's civil unions bill, which would create a separate institution essentially identical to marriage for same-gender couples. The bill was introduced in response to a 2005 constitutional court ruling that gave legislators until December 1st of this year to end the Marriage Act's discrimination against lesbi-gay couples. The commission called the civil union bill unconstitutional, discriminatory, and stigmatizing. It said the government should instead amend the Marriage Act to allow same-gender marriage. If lawmakers don't take action by December 1st, the nation's high court said the Marriage Act will automatically be interpreted to include same-gender couples. But the court has remained silent about whether or not civil unions will satisfy its ruling. Queer activists staged a march and picket against the civil union bill in Pretoria in mid-October. Civil partnerships are not equivalent to marriage. Alex Ringelman, one of the organizers, told the Independent newspaper, they entrench institutional segregation in our law and a separate inferior status for gay relationships.
Canada's Globe and Mail newspaper reports that groups still fighting marriage equality in the country now say they're no longer pushing for an immediate return to the traditional definition of one man and one woman. Facing almost certain defeat in a coming parliamentary vote to reopen the contentious issue, spokespeople from primarily conservative Christian groups said at a press conference this week that they'd be happy if politicians would simply study the impact of marriage by gay and lesbian couples on Canadian society. But officials representing four different religious denominations said at a separate news conference that repealing the law would restrict their freedom to perform same-gender ceremonies. The 2005 law creating marriage equality in Canada both opens legal marriage to same-gender couples and protects the rights of religious communities to live their faith in the ways they see appropriate vis-a-vis equal marriage. It would take a major shift to convince MPs that prolonging the marriage discussion with further study is a good idea. Most analysts say that lawmakers want to finally end the divisive debate and move on.
And some Canadian postal workers are wondering how much hate qualifies as hate mail. Several Vancouver, British Columbia mail carriers refused this week to deliver a pamphlet described by Canadian Union of Postal Workers spokesperson Ken Mooney as really offensive and hate mail. Some postal workers refused to even touch them. Produced by the Fundamentalist Baptist Mission of Waterford, Ontario, the tract rails against the plague of this 21st century, the consequences of the sin of homosexuality, AIDS. But Canada Post spokesperson Colleen Frick told the Toronto Star that the posties don't have the right to refuse to deliver the mail. The contract between the corporation and the union requires them to deliver mail the corporation deems acceptable, and this item was deemed such.
But finally, Rex Committee Lambda, or RKL, Austria's major LGBT civil rights organization, has celebrated its 15th anniversary in style. Over 500 people packed the chambers of the lower house of parliament in early October to honor the group in what the European branch of ILGA, the International Lesbian and Gay Association, called a first ever global event. The president of Austria sent video greetings, as did the head of Austria's police forces, the minister of justice, and the president of Austria's judges association were among the in-person speakers, moderated by constitutional court justice Lillian Hofmeister. Openly gay Justice Edwin Cameron of South Africa's Supreme Court of Appeals delivered the keynote speech, while out Australia High Court Justice Michael Kirby said in a congratulatory video that he regretted not being able to attend in person. A festive reception followed, held in the stunning Parthenon-like main hall of the Parliament building. Can any other queer advocacy group in the world top that?
Best News Wrap for the week ending October 28, 2006. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Kareem Ferguson.
And I'm Rick Watts.
one of the pieces from the porch. Well, actually, that's peace spelled P-E-A-C-E. Hawk and Dove by Trett Furey. This is Queer Voices.
And Trett Furey will be here in Houston Saturday night, November 4th, at Super Happy Funland in the Heights, 2610 Ashland between 26th and 27th Streets. Tickets are available. You can reserve them by emailing me, Deborah Bell, at thedivadeb at yahoo.com. That's THEDIVADEB. At yahoo.com, and we will reserve tickets and hold them at the door for you for the night of the concert on November 4th. You can also call after tonight, 832-452-1169. And we're going to have opening for Trett, local musician Sarah Golden. So we look forward to that, to seeing you on Saturday night at Super Happy Funland. And unfortunately, there's a lot of other things going on that night or and during that day. But Trett is one of the pioneers in women's music. She's been in the studio here at KPFT. We've played her music over the years, over 30 years, as long as the station's been around, just about. We've played Trett's music along with people like Chris Williamson and Margie Adam and Holly Neer, all those people that JD is so good about archiving with his queer music heritage. And you can also get tickets at the Lesbian Health Fair, Lesbian and Health Initiative Health Fair, the Rainbow Health Fair, they're calling it, which will be on Saturday the 4th. And we have Delma Cummings and Don Atkins, who are representing LHI tonight. And they're going to tell us a little bit more about this, the Fall Health Fair. Delma, you've been working with LHI for a while?
Yeah, about 10 years.
Uh-huh. And Don, are you?
Oh, quite a long time compared to Delma, only a year and a half.
Well, yeah, got to start somewhere. And tell us a little, something more about LHI. What does it do?
LHI is a lesbian health initiative. Main purpose is to provide mammograms, free mammograms, to people, to women, lesbians, who could not afford them any other way. We have a health fair twice a year. This is the fall one. Already, we've already given out, filled all the slots, 35 slots for mammograms Saturday.
So you have a unit that comes out from MD Anderson, and the women go in and actually have the mammograms performed during the day of the health fair.
Yes.
And then if they can't make it on that day, because I know people have to call ahead and schedule that, is there some other way they can be helped with getting a mammogram?
We give out forms from the Rose, free mammograms from the Rose. All they have to do is make an appointment at the Rose and go get a mammogram.
Okay.
We also follow up. If they have anything wrong, we can follow them all the way up into cancer treatment.
Uh-huh. What about if most of the women that make use of the services are people that don't have insurance, and so many of us don't. So what happens if something is found? Is work done to help them receive that treatment?
Yes, we have input into MD Anderson Hospital, and we can send them to the Rose for further analysis, and if necessary, into we can get them into MD Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
We have done some.
And the Rose is an incredible organization that offers low-cost to no-cost mammograms for women who can't afford them otherwise. And you can also go there if you have insurance and can afford to pay full free. In fact, we encourage you to do so because that helps those that can't pay. And they also do a really good job. I mean, I have had mammograms that have hurt, and I have at Rose, I've never felt uncomfortable, so I can really recommend it, having been one of the people that has made use of LHI in getting some of my health care. What other things are offered during the health fair? It's not just mammograms.
Well, this year, or actually this health fair, for the first time, we're actually going to be offering blood typing. So if you're out there and you're not sure if you're A or B, you can come and find out. We also have cholesterol checks, and we do blood pressure and glucose checks. We also do pap smears and HIV or STD testing. If you want to do that type of testing, you will need to call ahead of time. The phone number is, and I'll give you a second, so those of you that want to write this down, it's 713-830-3075. We do ask that if you're going to come in and have any of those things done, especially the cholesterol test, if you eat something and then you come and have your cholesterol tested, you're not going to have an accurate result. So we really ask you not to eat that morning, and preferably don't wear any perfume or cologne or deodorant, because that sometimes can affect some of the different testings. But
and also it might bother somebody who has allergies.
Well, there's that too. We don't want to make anybody uncomfortable. But the location of the health fair is 215 Westheimer.
And that was what was formerly known as the Montrose Clinic, but is now Legacy Community Health Services. Mm-hmm. It's just right there where the lower Westheimer, as they say. Mm-hmm. East, I guess it's east. I'm not sure what the direction really is, but the angle of the street of Montrose, and before you get to Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes
sense. Brazos.
To Brazos,
yes.
Before you get to Brazos. Jennifer knows it better than I do. And what time of day do you start? Because, like, if I'm not going to eat, I... You know.
Oh, yeah. Well, we start early in the morning. We start about 8:15, and we usually go till about 3:15. But one thing we were talking about earlier is the mammograms, and we have usually every year, and of course I'll say that this year and this won't happen, but usually we have a couple of people that don't show up for their mammograms. So if you're someone out there and you want to have a mammogram done, if you come early and we have someone cancel or no show, then we can put you in that slot, and that doesn't waste those people's time. So just because if you haven't, just go ahead and come on down.
So who should be getting a mammogram?
Any woman who's 40 or, well, at least from what I understand, the CDC recommends that any woman who's 40 or older needs to have a yearly screening. If you are under the age of 40 and you have a history of breast cancer in your family, then that's, you need to start 10 years before. So if, let's say, your aunt found a lump at the age of 37, you need to start having mammograms at 27. Or even if you don't have a history and you haven't reached the age of 40, if you've found a lump, you need to come in.
That means us.
Yeah. Well, I've been pretty faithful about getting my mammogram. Of course, you know, I always say they smush it down, and it's either a taco, a pancake, or a pizza. That's how flat, because they have to do that to get a good picture. And what they're looking at is something that indicates an abnormality. It's important that when you get screened, you get those films get sent to people that are going to read them correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And some cancers are not seen on mammogram or not found that way. But they can detect cancer at a much earlier stage than, like, through a breast exam.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of us, when we go to our doctor, may get a breast exam from the doctor or from the nurse. But there's another thing that we should be doing, and that's what?
Self-breast examination. Every time you shower.
Every time?
Every time you shower, you should soap yourself down and do a breast examination. It only takes a few seconds.
Okay, well, I've always understood that you shouldn't do it every time you shower, but at least once a month. And if you're still menstruating, to do it shortly after, like 5 days after your period ends. And if you're not, then you pick a day. Like, I always try to do it on the full moon, because, you know, the moon reminds me of a breast for some reason. And
I'll never be able to look at the moon again.
Oh,
the same way.
You'll be looking at it more.
I know I'll be taking more showers.
But yes, and if you want to, you can make it a participatory thing. Invite a friend, and you can examine
y'all
each other.
Get your partner involved.
Yes.
Or find a partner.
The reason for doing it monthly is because if you do it every day, you really aren't going to notice subtle differences. Mm-hmm. But if there's something different from the month before, you are likely. Yeah. And if it's big enough for you to feel it, it's been there a while. So it's really important to pay attention. Melissa Etheridge said she could see where there was a lump in her breast, but had not been doing self-exam. And, you know, there it was. And it's pretty amazing to think that there are people that would not realize something large enough to be seen or felt had not been, you know, that people aren't taking care of something that's preventative. Not that the cancer is preventative, but it is something you can do or detect early. And the earlier it's detected, the easier it is to treat.
More so likely the treatment's going to be successful. Like Cheryl Crow caught hers really early, and they just had to do a lumpectomy, whereas if you just wait and wait, sometimes they might have to remove the whole breast as well as lymph nodes and all kinds of other fun things.
And
so.
Chemo and radiation.
Oh, yeah.
Which is still better than
the alternative.
Having cancer and dying from it.
Now, if you do a self-examination, is there a different technique, something to look for, how to do it? One of the reasons women may not know how best to do it.
Well, it's actually good you ask that, because we have cards that have that information.
Oh, good.
And we also have, and this will be all kinds of fun, ladies, the little plastic feeling
rubbery
model breasts that have a lump in it. So, you know, if you're you can feel what it
really
feels like, or if you're bored and alone on a Saturday night.
Okay, yeah.
It feels kind of like a little hard pee is what they indicate. But it can be different. There are different forms of breast cancer. Most breast cancer that is treated is fairly small cancers that are in duct tube, which is in the ducts of the breast. And sometimes that does not turn into cancer, but if it's there, it's an indicator. It very well could be cancer. There's no way to tell for sure which ones will become cancer and which one is not. So it's a preventative thing to get the treatment. And many lumps are not cancerous, but they do need attention. They may be a cyst or a fatty tumor, something that's benign but still needs attention. So is there anything we haven't asked you about that you want to say about the Rainbow Health Fair on November 4th?
Well, there's one thing that, you know, we've talked a lot about cancer, and we kind of touched on death, which is not really a fun thing, but that's
Halloween.
One thing we're all going to face at some point. And we now have an attorney who comes, and she does medical power of attorney and advanced directives. And if you have not had that done, you need to get that done, because we all think it's not going to, well, yeah, I'm going to die, but it's going to be years and years from now. And you never know when you're going to be in a car accident or something's going to fall on your head, and you're going to wish you had that done. And if you have not had that done, please come on down.
So there are attorneys there that can help you with legal papers that concern your health care needs.
Yes.
Okay.
Also, something else that's important is the blood glucose testing. A year or so ago, we had a young lady come in, and her blood sugar was like over 300. And we sent her to the emergency room because she was in almost to have diabetic shock. So, and we do blood sugar testing. We do the A1C testing, which is the long-range, three-month type testing, and can tell you right away how your blood sugar is.
Right. And diabetes is a growing concern. And I think that they have found that people with diabetes are more prone to develop breast cancer. So, you know, the certain things go hand in hand. And the LHI also gives out good information about taking care of yourself throughout the year. And they send a monthly newsletter that has good
quarterly.
Health. Quarterly. Okay, I knew it was quarterly. A quarterly newsletter that has good health information in it. So once again, let's give the time, day, location, and how to get in touch.
November the 4th from 8:30, about 8:15 to 3:15 at the Legacy Health Clinic.
215 Westheimer.
215 Westheimer.
And the number to call, 713-426-3356. Or you can email LHI at LHIHouston.org or go to their website, LHIHouston.org. Well, Delma Cummings and Don Atkins, thank you for being with us on Queer Voices. And Don saying, wait a minute.
One thing we would like to do is just thank the people who have given us grants, because that's the only way we can fund this is those folks. And we'd
like to, let's do it quickly.
Houston Black Tide Dinner, Kindred Spirit Celebration, John Stephen Kellett Foundation, Crew of Olympus Texas, Texas Gay Rodeo Association, Charles Armstrong Investments, Hollyfield Foundation, LHI Celebration of Love Gala, and other private donors. Thank you so much.
And remember, that's this coming Saturday, those of you who just woke up.
And that's Queer. You're listening to Queer Voices. I'm Deborah Bell.
I'm Jennifer Renee.
And it is time for us to ask you to donate to KPFT. And we're going to go out to the lobby and talk to Ernesto because he's out there in Pledge Center and Central. And I don't hear any phones ringing.
It is quiet this afternoon, or evening, rather. It's always afternoon around here. It's always sunny at KPFT, 713-526-5738.
I thought actually it was always cloudy. We're sort of living in a clouds. And
Ernesto's been working too much.
Right. No, it's imaginary always, type of environment here.
There's where, always a happy sun.
Well, and we are trying very hard to ask people to donate to this station because it's really important. This is sort of an oasis, in fact, of what's going on in the community. It's an oasis because we actually get to talk about the issues. And in fact, as I was telling people, Ernesto, when is the last time you told us what to do on the show?
I'd have to say I don't think it's been any time soon.
It has not been ever, actually. I do remember.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yes. Ernesto has never told us to put anything on the show, made some suggestions sometimes. Neither has Dwayne Bradley, the general manager, or neither has the board, the local board or the national board. That's the really interesting thing, is that we're able to, you know, do the topics that we want to talk about, as long as we're in the framework of not attacking people. And, you know, of course, sometimes it's difficult not to attack people.
No kidding.
But we do very, you know, there's this documentary on Point of View talking about Sesame Street just the past week or two. And it was just really interesting how Sesame Street went international, and when they finally, and what's really neat about Sesame Street International is that when they go to each one of these different countries, how they try to really reflect the culture of each country. And when they went to South Africa, after a very short time, they realized they had to talk about AIDS, HIV, because it's so prevalent down there. And they really wanted to get the information to the children in a very, and they don't talk down to children. It was a very adult way. But as soon as they did that, some of the people in Congress, some of the right-wingers, really started criticizing Sesame Street because they felt they were going over their bounds. And they were getting to business that they didn't really need to do. And they, you know, they do that here. They talk about how they're always for, you know, keeping to the, you know, letting people have their rights and their privacy. But in reality, they really are interested in getting into, you know, even into our community, into our bedroom. But KPFT tries to go beyond those bounds by able to talk about the issues and talk about what's going on and what's really, really important. And not only on Queer Voices, but on programs throughout the day. Isn't that correct?
It's absolutely correct. We bring you a wide variety of music, culture, perspectives, news, and so much more. And there are people just like you for the last 35 years who have supported the fact that this type of radio is available, this type of diversity in programming. You don't necessarily have to be gay and lesbian. You don't even have to necessarily be black, white, blue, any other color at all. Maybe you've had your whole worldview opened up just by listening to KPFT. If you appreciate that type of radio, if you appreciate that perspective, Mike, what's the number?
713-526-5738.
713-526 KPFT. Mike's here at phone one. We've got a room full of great volunteers here, and they're ready to take your call right now.
Please make that call right now, 713-526-KPFT.
This is Queer Voices.
Hello, this is Greg Chapman.
I'm Deborah Bell.
Jennifer Renee.
And you know what? I think there's some of our listeners that don't get the point about how this works, how they're supposed to go to the phone and dial 713-526-5738 and say, I love queer voices. I have to give them all my money.
It's hard for us to talk if those phones aren't ringing.
That's right. So please make those phones ring and make us happy, because we don't have to come to your door tomorrow night because you don't want to see us. That's why we're on the radio.
That's right. Right. That's the only that we Deborah will not sing if you'll donate.
only if I'm singing in a sing along, which no one really knows, because I can mouth the words. I didn't even use the songbook.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing about a sing along.
Yeah,
you can just let the other voices carry you along.
That's right. It's fun, but it really, trick or treat. It's time for you to do your part of making queer voices happen and to contribute to the work that we do here at KPFT. It's vital, because for some people it's the only connection they have to the larger community, and we try to bring you a diversity of issues, a diversity of people. We were just talking about lesbian health, and now we're going to be talking with Greg. You read a book.
I read a book.
Because he's a smart man. He read a book.
Yeah. I read a book. It's by Michael Thomas Ford, and it's called Gay Men, Wicca, and Living a Magical Life, The Path of the Green Men, or Man, excuse me. And this time of year is a real appropriate time to be talking about it. Samhain is November 1st. It is now called All Saints Day. It originally meant summer's end. It was considered the end of the calendar year. All the crops were brought in that were remaining. Any cattle, goats, whatever, were slaughtered if they were to be consumed over the winter. It was the preparation for winter. And it was considered the time when the veil between the spiritual and our end world is at its thinnest. And so that's why people traditionally then, they did tarot cards, other kinds of fortune-telling, whatever, to see into the future. And that developed with the rise of Christianity into All Saints Day and Halloween. And so it's considered a very important time for pagan spirituality, because it is that time of year where you really set your intention to the coming year.
Right.
So this is a good time.
It's also known as the Witch's New Year.
Yeah, the Witch's New Year.
Right.
And All Hallows Eve, the name Halloween, and it's like in Mexico, they celebrate the Day of the Dead.
Right.
And it becomes a time to honor those that have passed over, but just to do it in kind of a joyful way. And I think it also helps us get in touch with our own mortality and our link to those that have gone before. We're kind of facing down the darkness that we know is coming with the winter months.
Exactly. That was really the whole point of the tradition. And like most of the religious holidays, most of them actually had pagan beginnings. It's pretty amazing. And the pagan calendar, Yule became Christmas. Easter was called, I'll have to check. It's called Astara, the spring equinox. And the patron goddess for that holiday, her name was Easter.
Uh-huh.
Spelled with an R-E instead of an E-R. And then there's another holiday called Imbolc, and I'm sorry if I mangled the...
Imbolc.
Imbolc, yeah. That's called, it's the quickening, and that's the preparation for the spring equinox, and that is Lent, which is also the preparation for Easter.
You know, even Groundhog's Day has its roots, because it's February 2nd is the day they bless the candles in the Catholic Church.
Hmm.
And it is the time between winter and spring, and that's why when the groundhog... You know, and they say, does it see it shatter or whatever? It doesn't matter. There's still going to be 6 more weeks of winter, because 6 weeks after February 2nd is the spring equinox.
Right.
I just thought it was a shameless promotion.
It's pretty amazing, and even the other kind of high holiday is Beltane. It's not as well known, but it marks the beginning of summer. So it's the polar opposite of Samhain, Halloween, and the substitute for that on the Christian calendar is Pentecost.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And so you go down the line, and they pretty much all substituted traditional practices with Christianized versions. What the book is about is within the pagan community, there hasn't been necessarily a lot of material specifically oriented towards gay men. It's very much of a goddess-oriented practice for most people, and this book says that's perfectly fine. It doesn't knock that at all, but what it's trying to do is basically offer a really gay-friendly path to pagan spirituality.
Well, a lot of gay men have been drawn to spirituality that's alternative than Christian. In fact, because the patriarchal religion is very condemning of women and of gay men, for a long time, there's been a group known as the Radical Fairies who celebrate in a pagan way. And there are quite a few gay men that I know that are in Wiccan or Druids, or they experience spirituality, but they just focus it in a different way.
There's definitely many traditions. I mean, there's not any central organization for pagan beliefs. It's very sort of an organized take on spiritual practice, which I think is good. And there's the Reclaiming Tradition, the Radical Fairies. There's other groups that are very gay-friendly. Overall, the author indicated that when he initially began his practice, that overall there was just mere tolerance towards gay men. There wasn't a lot of acceptance that a basic belief system that a lot of the groups held was that circles should be like men and women. You should have the polar opposite energies, mm-hmm. or that there was an elevated place for women in terms of communicating with the earth goddess and that sort of thing. And so he encountered himself in his beginning of practice. He felt a lot of resistance and isolation. Mm-hmm. So part of his response to that was to try to actually create a tradition that was just purely for gay men, and that's what he calls the Path of the Green Man.
I see.
And, you know, the basic philosophy for pagan belief is very, very simple. And it boils down to the reed, which is, "And in harm none, do as you will." And that's basically it.
Repeat that again.
"As it harm none, do as you will." So as long as you're not doing any harm to mm-hmm, anyone, yeah, then you can basically are free to do whatever you want.
God, that sounds like the 60s.
Bringing no harm, do as you will. And there's also some other tenets which start to sound very much like some of the teachings of Christ, which such as whatever you put out comes back to you.
Right, and that boils down into the fact that a primary component of the practice is setting your intention. And so there's this idea that if you put out, whatever you put out will come back to you three times over.
Mm-hmm. Right, so that's why I say there's no such thing as a bad witch, because if you did that, you'd be wishing harm to yourself and three times over what you're wishing on anyone else. So your intent, and that, as far as casting a circle or gathering with others for ritual, which they do in most churches, they have rituals.
Oh, yeah.
This is just a different form. Some of them are very similar to
right. And Michael Thomas Ford's take on ritual and props and everything is that in and of themselves, there's nothing magical about them.
Right.
But what they help to do is focus your mind, and it's the focusing of your mind that helps you create the intention within yourself, and that's where the magic happens. And
absolutely.
So what I really found appealing about the book was the fact that it's not a practice where you're looking basically to the outside to figure out how you need to live your life. There's not like these set of rules, do's and don'ts, and you have
to... There's no one that is an intermediary between you and your spiritual... how you recognize it as a deity or, in my case, the universe. This, I'm responsible for my own spirituality.
Right. That is it. You are responsible for your own spirituality. It is not as easy as going and picking up a book and saying, okay, well, I'm just going to believe in that. I'm not going to do any work on myself to figure it out, what makes sense for me and what I would believe. I'm just going to let someone else tell me. That doesn't work here. There's not enough dogma to figure out to have that set of rules that you can simply rely on. You have to set your own intention on what you want to invite into your life and practice it. And mm-hmm. so a basic Wiccan practice is to meditate each day, create your magical space that you go to, and invite what it is that you want in your life. And if you're lonely, maybe you invite love, but it would not be, I want this specific person to love me. That would be considered manipulation.
Yeah. Right.
But you would invite love. And if you set that intention and you do it day after day after day, then hopefully the magic will happen and you'll all of a sudden find that in your life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to ask about this book and what it said, but I do know in Druids as well as Celts, they don't have, you know, as far as marriage, it's called hand fasting. And there was never a prohibition of two males, two females, males, females, whatever. There, as far as marriage and coupling, it could be anything. They were very progressive in their own way 3,000 years ago.
They were, in fact, on May 1st,
which we celebrate as May Day.
May Day.
The infamous Maypole Festival. Traditionally, couples or people would just run out into the fields after they did their festival, and you would couple with whoever you happened to be with.
Run into it.
Right. And so it was...
sounds like the 60s.
It does. I'm having a flashback.
The 60s, you know, 2,000 years ago. But there was still
the background of, because that was to be fertile and for the crops and,
right,
and like that.
It wasn't that we're going to be wild and immoral. It was the idea that they were honoring the fertility of the earth. That's why it was in the spring. And so it was a celebration of life.
Yeah, it's the rebirth of life.
Right. And right now we're so caught up in sexual mores, you know, we're still in our post-Victorian hangover that we just have a very sort of prudish view.
Our Puritan roots.
Yeah, yeah.
So. Now, was it your own quest looking at spirituality that led you to this book?
Well, you know, that's the odd thing is I was Baptist. I grew up. I converted to Episcopalian when I came out, and I've gotten tired of being a political issue. I mean, it's a very gay-friendly church overall, but you're still a political issue, who you love. And I'm tired of that, so I decided, you know, I want to look elsewhere.
So the book again is?
It's The Path of the Green Man by Michael Thomas Ford, and he has a website, www.michaelthomasford.com.
And J.D. said he's read a number of books by this author and quite enjoys him. So, and that is just we just touched on it.
Very
really,
touched on it.
Also, there's some of this is discussed in the Da Vinci Code. They bring out some of the pagan stuff, and in Judy Gron's book, Another Mother Tongue. So, if you want to get started on looking at this other way of experiencing spirituality, there are places you can go. You can Google, and but be careful, because there are charlatans out there and people that will be manipulative and try to do things for their own gain. And that is never what this kind of spirituality is about.
And I will mention real briefly, in the back of the book, he does give a list of additional reading resources.
Oh, good bibliography always helps.
Yeah, that's right. Good.
Thank you, Greg. That
Thank
was
you,
really,
Greg.
Really interesting. And now, once again, trick or treat. Please give KPFT some money.
We need you.
Call us.
Well, we need your money. Anyway.
Yeah, we've got some volunteers that are falling asleep out there. We would like for you to call 713-526-5738. Oh, there's the phone.
See, someone's
heard it.
713-526-KPFT.
We're going to have the rest of This Way Out on, and then we're going to be having Joan Devlin with her special Halloween interview.
But first, here's Jack.
We're asking you to please call us at 713-526-KPFT. You know, maybe, Deborah, you and I should go out and start knocking on people's doors.
They don't want me to come to their house now.
Well, if they don't want that to happen, then
that's
maybe
right.
They should
call.
You
better get busy dialing that phone, I'm telling you.
And certainly a lot of people in this area of town have been knocked on doors by the political caucus or HERA or some other people, you know, getting support for certain candidates. And we are able to do that here on KPFT by talking about some of the candidates that that reflect our issues, and sometimes that don't, and expose them that don't. But what's really most important is that we actually have a voice. We have a voice. And I remember when I started volunteering here almost 25 years ago, when Ray Hill was doing a show called Wildenstein.
When you were 12?
Yes, right. When I was minus 12, yeah. and it was really interesting how guarded Ray Hill was of the particular radio show, because that was the only piece of medium we have. Now, you know, we have a few more things now, and we have a few less things.
Of course, we have our sister show, After Hours.
And, you know, we also lost our weekly newspaper. The Montrose, the Houston Voice.
Is now a monthly,
and it's much more entertainment than news. Outsmart is a great magazine, but it's more of a magazine. It isn't really news. And we try to bring you what's going on in the community every week, or what the community is about, like what we're going to be doing for the second hour when Joan's going to be calling in and talking about Halloween and talking about more than just, you know, going out and trick-or-treating, talking about how it started and what are some of the things when it happened. And, you know, Joan's really good at that. Joan does some great book interviews. And even though she moved away to Iowa, she still calls in and contributes to the show. We have David Elliott, who contributes Washington, but we also like to do a lot of local things, because that's really what our community is. And we bring in people who are doing fundraisers or doing some special events, like the Women's Health Initiative. They do some very important work. There's a lot of things going on in the community, and we try to bring that stuff to you. And I broke rule number one by not shutting off my cell phone.
Oh, and, we were wondering whose phone that was.
Actually, it's Joan calling.
Someone's calling.
So we're going to ask you to...
Oh, yeah, she probably doesn't realize that the phones are switched over because of the pledge drive.
Right. So it is time for you to make that call. 713-526-KPFT.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
TV gonna send me to my dreams. Long sermons from a priest still won't give me what I need. I'm the only one tangled up in the sheets. I miss you, baby, and I can't sleep, nothing like the feel of you, can't sleep. There ain't no substitute, can't sleep. Don't know what I'm gonna do. I miss you, baby, and I can't sleep. Long walks, no caffeine. I've tried everything. KPFT. Soothing music, no relief. I'm lying here with my little cold feet. I miss you, baby, and I can't sleep, nothing like the feel of you, can't sleep. Ah, there ain't no substitute, can't sleep. Don't know what I'm gonna do. I miss you, baby, and I can't sleep now. Even 18 winks would do, cause that would leave just 22, and maybe you'll come back and I will prove I'd rather lose some sleep with you, baby. Anytime, clean the house till it squeaks. Go to bed and what do I see? Too much room next to me. Give my pillow a little squeeze. Count my blessings, counting all kinds of sheep. I miss you, baby, and I can't sleep. Just 22 and maybe you'll come back and I will prove I'd rather lose some sleep with you, baby. Anytime, long walks, no caffeine. I have tried everything. Foreign movies, cup of tea, soothing music, no relief. I'm the only one tangled up in the sheets. I miss you, baby, and I can't sleep, nothing like the feel of you, can't sleep. Ah, there ain't no substitute, can't sleep. Don't know what I'm gonna do. I miss you, baby, and I can't sleep, can't sleep.
I can't sleep. That was Ann Reed from her album Timing Is Everything.
Here at KPFT, your vote matters most. Now here's a word for one of our candidates.
Hi, I'm Bob Sanborn, or Dr. Bob, as many of you know me. Yes, I'm running for the board here at KPFT. Why? Because service is something I care about dearly, and I care about non-commercial radio. For those of you who don't know me, I'm a longtime activist and advocate for children and education here in Houston. Currently, I'm the CEO of Children at Risk, a nonprofit advocacy group. Previously, I spent many years at Rice University as the Associate Dean for Student Affairs. And also previously, I served as the Dean of Hampshire College in Amherst, Massachusetts. I grew up in Puerto Rico, but Houston is my home and where I make a difference. I hope that you will help me make a difference and vote in the KPFT elections. I'm Bob Sanborn, and thank you for your support. Peace.
This is 90.1 KPFT, Houston. Here at KPFT, your vote matters most. Now here's a word from one of our candidates.
This is Thomas Williams. I come to you today as our basic liberties are being attacked. The media in this country has failed to serve the public, instead focusing on serving corporate interests, right in step with the current administration. It is a time where we must stand up and defend our liberties. Freedom of speech is at center stage and must be upheld. KPFT is a valuable asset to us. We need to increase awareness and active participation in the station. As a member of the local station board, I'll actively work to protect this resource, exerting my continuous efforts to expand the listener base by actively working with underrepresented communities, working to develop new and innovative fundraising activities, and ensure that the programming is responsive to the diverse needs of the Houston region. I ask you, please support democracy and vote in the upcoming elections. A vote with KPFT is a vote for freedom. This is Thomas Williams, and I thank you for your time.
This is 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
And now from the home of the Great Pumpkin, here is Joan Devlin.
Hi, this is Joan Devlin in Iowa, and there is no Great Pumpkin here. There are, however, some witches, which is something we're going to be talking about tonight, only our witches tonight are going to be ones in Salem. I have Peter Alachi on the line with me. Peter, are you with us?
I am with you, Joan. How are you?
Fine. How are you doing?
Oh, it's been a while, huh?
Yeah, time flies.
I know, time flies.
Peter is actually a resident of Salem, Massachusetts, and he has written two books. One is called Salem Summer of Sam, On the Trail of Bewitched in Salem, 1970. And then he's done a pictorial tale of the Bewitched Statue of Salem, Massachusetts, which is a story about the controversy surrounding TV Land's placement of a Samantha Stevens statue in the town square at Salem. So, Peter, let's kind of begin at the beginning a little bit. What was Salem like in 1970 when Bewitched came? Because many of us know it today as the Halloween capital of the world. Was it always Salem, that way?
Yeah, Salem back in 1970 was still evolving. I think if you look at Salem's history in general, Salem has four facets that tourists come to see. They come to see the Peabody Essex Museum to learn about its trade history. They come for Nathaniel Hawthorne for his literature. They come for the architecture. And, of course, they come for the witch trials of 1692. So Salem in 1970 was really an all-encompassing. Tourists came to Salem to see all of these. In 1970, something happened that they started emphasizing the kitsch side of Salem more and more. The Halloween fairs and the occult. And that all really started in 1970, around that time.
And what brought Bewitched to Salem?
Well, Bewitched came to Salem. They had planned originally to film in Salem. They wanted to film in Salem, to do some exterior scenes in Salem. And the opportunity came when their studio in Hollywood burned down. And what happened, they kind of panicked. They wanted to come to Salem immediately and film there. And Maxwell Henry, the assistant director of Bewitched at the time, gave a call to Michael Linquata of the Gloucester House. And he was truly panicking over the phone. And he says, we really need to come up to Salem to film in your locale. Would you be able to help us? And Michael Linquata didn't even know who this guy is. It was an early Sunday morning. So he sort of accepted, and the rest is history. They came during the week of June 20th, and they filmed for 6 days in Salem, between Salem and Gloucester, on location.
Now, fast forward 40 years to 2 years ago when the Samantha statue was unveiled.
Yep.
You know, Bewitched is an icon. It's a TV icon. It's got a gay mystique. It's got a feminist mystique. It's got fans all over the world. And you would think, of all places, Salem, which is one of the most open-minded communities in the world, would not only not mind a Samantha statue, they would embrace the idea of a Samantha statue. So what happened?
I think you'd find that most people did embrace the idea of the statue. I don't think there was much of controversy among 99% of the residents. I think you had some people in town who were truly offended that the statue had come to Salem because of his historical perspective. They were historical purists. They said basically that there is a lack of strong connection between the Bewitched statue and Salem. And they made the argument that it is basically a sitcom, and a sitcom that was based in Westport, of all places. So why not erect it in Westport, not Salem? And then they said, well, look, you know, we have great statues in Salem. You know, you were here in Salem, and you saw the statues in Daniel Hawthorne. You saw the statue of Roger Conant, the founder of Salem. And that statue is going to be sitting among these kind of these other statues, which have historical importance. So, so it's going to sit, you know, in the middle of the town at the crossroads between the Witch House and the Peabody Essex Museum. Does it really belong here? I mean, this is basically their argument. They said, well, you might as well erect the statue of Colonel Klink in the middle of Auschwitz. I mean, this is how far they carried it. But if you look at the demonstrators at the unveiling ceremony in 2005, there were truly a handful. There were about 15 or 20 of them, not that many. And the guy who was actually arrested during the unveiling ceremony wasn't even from Salem. He was from Peabody. So essentially, there are you know, people in Salem who disagreed with it, and there are people in Salem who like the statue. And if you go by the statue today, you always see tourists stopping by, taking their photos with it. And it's a nice attraction for the tourists, because they come to Salem for the kitsch side of Salem. At the same time, once they visit Salem, they end up learning about the other history of Salem, the witch trials and literature, and they see the architecture. And, of course, there is the fun side of Salem at the same time. I mean, this time of the year, it's crazy. You can't even walk around Salem.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
But I wanted to say, because, truthfully, this is how I learned about the witch trials. I heard about them on Bewitched. I read about them. And I've met many people, both on Bewitched fan sites and even just in general, who will say that.
Yes,
I wondered about
indeed.
The witch trials because of Bewitched.
Yeah, I mean,
so,
you know,
I mean, it's been doing this for years.
You know, one of the very episodes, one of the episodes in the Salem Saga episodes was based at the witch house where one of the judges of the witch trials, Jonathan Corwin, lived. And basically, you know, it's an imaginary story, but basically Samantha in that story sort of gets rid of that accursed witchcraft trial altogether by telling the judge, look, these people aren't even witches. I am a witch, but they're not witches. You know, they were ordinary mortals. You know, so it was a good thing somehow. And you know, you're right. I mean, a lot of people learned about Salem from Bewitched.
And the thing is, the overall message was tolerance. And this is why this
yes.
show has appealed to gay people for so many generations.
Oh, I agree. I think, you know, I think the show is about tolerance. You know, I mean, there is also the theme of the show really is there is prejudice, and prejudice creates conflicts. I mean, you see the conflict manifested, for example, between Endora. Of course, Endora is the goddess.
Yes.
Between Endora and Darren. You know, she would call him a bigot sometimes to his face, and Darren, in moments of rage, would say things like, you know, now I know why they used to burn witches at Salem, he'd say. And, you know, he'll annoy the hell out of her, and she'll turn him into a frog or a donkey or something. But Bewitch is a sort of a gay metaphor. You know, here you have Sam, who is a witch, is being asked by her husband to keep it to herself, keep it in the closet, so to speak, and to keep her witch powers repressed. Just to fit in the norms of the human family. And you know, I mean, how similar is it to many gays today who are married, you know, who can't come out of the closet for various social reasons? Until today, you see it. But especially back in those days. So her challenge, Sam's challenge in that episode was to leave her zone of comfort, deny herself her true self, and that really required a great deal of self-esteem on her part. So I think that, along with the fact that you had characters on the show who were gay, I mean, I don't think that was the main reason why it's such a you know, popular show among the gay community. But you have of course Paul Lynde, you have Maurice Evans, you have the second Garen, you know, Dick Sargent, all of them were also gay. And of course you have Samantha herself, you know, Liz Montgomery, who was very supportive of gay issues.
So let's get to your books now.
Yes.
The first one is called Salem, Summer of Sam.
Yes.
And then the second one is called A Pictorial Tale of the Bewitched Statue of Salem, Massachusetts. What do people need to do to get these books if they would be interested? And I have to say, for the especially the Salem, Summer of Sam, the research is phenomenal. The things you found are just amazing.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Yeah, the only way to get them is through my website right now, and they can go on palachi.com, www.palachi.com, spelled palachi.com, P as in Peter, A as in Adam, L as in Larry, A as in Apple, C as in Christmas, H as in Halloween, and I as in Intrigue. And if they go to the website, there is a portal on the website to order these two books. They're $9.95 each. And the portal is, by the way, driven by through PayPal. So it's very easy to place an order.
Great. I was reading, you want to share something with our listeners, David White, Larry Tate, living up to his reputation about the House of the Seven Gables. You want to tell that story?
Yes. Okay, sure. What happened here in this case is Larry Tate was filming a scene with Dick Sargent outside the House of the Seven Gables, and they were conversing, and there was a reporter standing next to them, and she heard Larry Tate say, grimace about how much it cost to go through the House of the Seven Gables. He goes, $1.25 just to walk through this house. Can you imagine what it cost to just sleep there? And he was, like, really annoyed at that. So White probably would have been livid to learn that by the time the new Bewitched season opened in September, admission to the old house had depreciated by a whole quarter to $1.50. And actually, now the admission to the House of the Seven Gables is almost $11. So he would be really outraged.
And the other story about David White that I find fascinating, and that's also germane to topics of today, is that when he was interviewed, I believe, in Gloucester, he kind of spoke out against Nixon and Vietnam.
Yes, he was actually quite a liberal, of his days. And he was, in those days, early in, during the presidency of Richard Nixon, Spiro Agnew vice president, used to go on the attack, attacking the anti-war movement backers, calling them apologists for the North Vietnamese regime.
You said that was Dick Cheney? Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry.
Pretty much, yeah. It sounds really similar, doesn't it? But what happened is in March, Nixon had, in March of 1970, Nixon attacked Cambodia, invaded Cambodia, and had deliberately expanded the Vietnam War. So he had initially, during his campaign, promised that he would reduce the troop levels and reneged on his promise, essentially. So he sent out Agnew to attack his opponents, and it came at the heels of the Kent State University massacre of May 4th, during which several students were killed or injured. And David White was quite annoyed at the whole thing, and basically said to a reporter, he said, when you throw a rock, do you expect to get shot? And really, everybody was looking at him. Nobody even replied, because that's exactly what happened. Students were throwing rocks. Why did they get shot at the time? And why would Spiro Agnew go on the attack at that specific time?
Great. Well, Peter, give us one more time the website where people can get your two books.
Okay, website is www.palachi.com, PALACHI.com. And,
great.
And
the books are Salem, Summer of Sam, On the Trail of Bewitched in Salem, 1970.
Correct.
And A Pictorial Tale of the Bewitched Statue of Salem, Massachusetts. Perfect Halloween reading. Peter will get them out to you right away. They are wonderful books. And Peter, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Joan, for having me on the show.
Great. Well, and you are listening to KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston.
In order to protect the sanctity of marriage, is it enough to keep the queers from getting hitched? Stopping there just puts the proverbial horse behind the carriage. Why not attack the problem at its very source? It's time to outlaw divorce. That's right, if we can't get married, you can't get divorced. If gay people can't tie the knot, straight folks have got to stay together till death do them part. No matter how miserable they are. Like Elizabeth Taylor, with more ex-husbands than anyone can recall. No more annulments coming from the Church of Rome. No more divorced attorneys getting filthy rich. No more relief from the seven-year itch. Because if we can't get married, you can't get divorced. If gay people can't tie the knot, straight folks have got to stay together if only for the kids. No matter how bad their marriage is, you'll say your vows.
in the Constitution to reflect this little change. No more second chances, no more alimony, if marriage needs defending as they claim. Take another look at who's to blame. If we can't get married, if you can't get divorced, if gay people can't tie the knot, straight folks have got to stay together whatever it takes. The sanctity of marriage is at stake.
Ron Romanofsky there for the straight folks who don't mind queers but want to save marriage for themselves. The good news for gays and lesbians is that the New Jersey Supreme Court has decided that same-gender couples deserve the same rights and benefits enjoyed by opposite-sex couples under the civil marriage statutes. The bad news is that the ruling could galvanize the forces against marriage equality just ahead of the November 7th U.S. midterm elections. Voters in eight states will be handing down their own verdicts on the issue, and what they do at the ballot box could have a huge impact on the future of legal recognition for lesbian and gay couples. Despite the track record of previous ballot initiatives to ban marriage equality, analysts say that at least a couple of the current measures may fail. Free Speech Radio News reporter Darby Hickey looks at some of these initiatives and how the marriage debate will affect the elections overall.
Six of those amendments, if approved, would also restrict the legal benefits of marriage to married couples only, banning civil unions as well as gay marriage. While amendments in Tennessee, South Carolina, and Idaho are likely to pass, gay activists say they're optimistic about the chances of defeating the amendments in several other states. 10 other proposed amendments died in state legislatures over the past year, but anti-gay marriage activism could get a shot in the arm from the New Jersey Supreme Court decision, says Maggie Gallagher, president of the Institute for Marriage and Public Policy.
It's that it intensifies the organizers and leadership that kind of motivates their people to get out for a variety of reasons, and I think it will have an impact in New Jersey and in other places in terms of reinforcing the fears of a lot of Americans that they could wake up and find that, you know, a couple of judges have now announced that not only is everything they think about marriage wrong, but that they're like a bigot for even imagining that, you know, to make a marriage you need a husband and wife.
Groups mobilizing for the recognition of same-sex relationships seem to be doing well in Arizona, Wisconsin, and South Dakota, where some opinion polls show voters may defeat those amendments. In Colorado, gay activists have put more energy into passing a domestic partnership law than into stopping the constitutional amendment banning gay marriage. The legal status of all unmarried couples is the subject of a proposed Virginia constitutional amendment, which supporters say will ensure nothing like gay marriage will ever come to their state. The differences among these proposals and the diversifying tactics of groups on both sides of the issue leave the future of state recognition of same-sex couples in flux, says author Jonathan Rauch.
There's no question that there will be various forms throughout America of recognition for gay couples. That's clearly going to happen, and not only the poll numbers, but the facts on the ground show it. The question is, what form will those arrangements take? And I believe that that question is very, very far from settled.
What's also unclear is how the gay marriage issue will affect voter turnout during these midterm elections. Gay marriage as a mobilizing issue of conservative voters may have been hot 2 years ago, but a number of factors have changed that, says Bob Benenson, politics editor at Congressional Quarterly.
It just is not appearing as the kind of issue that we had in 2004 in terms of voter turnout.
Recognizing that same-sex marriage is also not the number one issue for many people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender, or LGBT, a group of progressives from the LGBT community issued a statement several months ago called Beyond Marriage, which connected the push for same-sex marriage to larger social justice struggles. A signatory to the letter, Columbia University professor Allie Miller, says that anti-gay marriage amendments are both a direct threat to a specific group and a diversionary tactic from efforts to oppress many kinds of people.
So it was an effort to be part of all of those discussions, but on the side of social progress, and to refute the notion, to expose the fact that anti-same-sex marriage is itself, those positions are about stripping people of rights, but also make it clear that to be for marriage by itself would be unreal. We wanted to situate the arguments for many different kinds of families in a broader social movement struggle.
The struggle for equal rights is progressing, says Marty Rouse of the Human Rights Campaign, seemingly taking in stride defeats like the Georgia and New York court decisions against gay marriage earlier this year. Rouse says ups and downs, including the New Jersey Supreme Court decision and the fall elections, are all part of a movement for the realization of equal rights.
This is a long-term struggle for equal rights. And right now, in 33 states across this country, you can still be fired from your job for being gay or lesbian. How can you fight against a marriage ban in Tennessee if you can't even talk about being gay without risking your job and security for your family? So this is really a long-term struggle, a long-term fight.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Darby Hickey in Washington, D.C.
PFLAG, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. In 1972, as Gene and Jules Manford watched their local newscast, they saw their son Morton beaten during a gay protest at a New York City hotel as police did nothing. Their anger galvanized them into action. Gene wrote a letter to the editor of the New York Post saying simply, "My son is a homosexual and I love him." The Manfords soon appeared on more than 20 talk shows as parents in support of their gay children. In 1972, Gene marched with her son in the New York City Pride Parade, carrying a sign saying, "Parents of gays united in support of our children." Of course, the crowd embraced her. Within a year, she formed a parent support group in New York City. Her idea blossomed into the national organization called PFLAG, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. It's no wonder PFLAG gets the loudest applause at Pride parades all across America. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Mary Gay Hutcherson.
LGBT history is still in the making, as support groups like PFLAG have also been rallying the families and friends of lesbians and gay men in several other countries.
Hi, this is Carleen.
And I'm Gareth.
And we're from JFLAG.
Jamaica Forum for Lesbians, Homosexuals, and Gays.
And you're listening to This Way Out,
the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine.
Hello, I'm Dr. Robert Simmons, Jr. of Lebanon, Ohio, a longtime This Way Out listener and donor. In memory of my mother, Mabel Simmons, I'm issuing a matching challenge to supporters of this volunteer-driven nonprofit operation. Please visit thiswayout.org to see how your help to keep this program on the air will now be worth twice as much. You'll also get a tax deduction if you're in the United States, and you'll find some unique holiday gifts there too. Again, please log on to thiswayout.org. We'll all be very thankful.
A San Francisco Bay Area band of women, a golden boy from the same neighborhood, and a Texas honey whose name is Money share their music and inspiration in this month's audio file.
Oakland, California area comes a very talented addition to the world of jazz. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson, and you're listening to Audiophile. The name of the group and the album is Montclair Women's Big Band. Ellen Sealing is the band's director.
This is our debut recording, which we did in 03 after the band had been together for about 67 years. It features 14 classic big band arrangements, including five vocals by Vicki Randolph and Hillary and Pamela Rose, and a whole host of local Bay Area very hot women jazz soloists.
More about this album at www.montclairwomensbigband.com.
New York-based Reuben Bouchart's second album is called Golden Boy, and it showcases his singing and songwriting talents as well as his diverse musical influences.
It's a lushly orchestrated collection of songs that harken back to the golden days by the Golden Gate, meaning California, where I grew up. And it's sort of 70s classic soul-tinged chamber pop. Stevie Wonder meets Rufus Wainwright, or maybe early Elton John, something like that.
You can learn more about Reuben Bouchart's album, Golden Boy, at www.reubenbouchart.com. That's www.reubenbouchart.com.
Texas comes Miss Money, whose music blends R&B, gospel, and hip-hop.
And The Love of Money is the title of her debut CD.
The Love of Money CD is my first step out as a vocalist, and what I did is I went to the studio and I compiled all of my vocal tracks while being under the mixtape radar. It shows what you can do with little resources and a lot of faith.
Let's take it from the top. Seems I'm working all the time. Yeah. To tell you how I feel and keep my feelings real. Talking all that anger, baby. Tell me what's the deal.
Find out more about Miss Money and her album, The Love of Money, at www.missmoney.net.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas, 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Keep listening.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Rick Watts, Kareem Ferguson, Rex Walker with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, Judd Proctor, and Brian Burns with Mary Gay Hutcherson, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Thanks also to Darby Hickey and Free Speech Radio News. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from you, our listeners. We thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how your help to keep this program on the air is now worth twice as much to us, and choose from some special CD thank you gifts. You can email us at tworadio@aol.com or write to us at Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, U.S. USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on 2BLU, Katoomba, New South Wales, KALW, San Francisco, California, WOJB, Hayward, Wisconsin, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
We are incredibly lucky to have a show like This Way Out as part of Queer Voices. It comes off the satellite. It was done last night, so it's very fresh, very new, and it's very professionally done. And that's part of it. We hope that the rest of our show that we put together is done professionally. It's done that we talk to people who are have something to say. I'm very lucky as the producer of this show to have an incredible staff of people who volunteer and put up with me and show up every week. In fact, it's actually been easier for me to do the show because of the great people like Glenn and Deborah and Jennifer and Greg and Ellie. And who else am I missing out on? Did I remember everybody? Everybody who's involved in the show. It's really great. They come up here. They have great attitudes. They work in putting the interviews together. Deborah does the scheduling, which sometimes is not as easy as it seems. And we all work together here. We don't always listen to each other, but we do work together. And it's a really great team, and it's really great to be able to come up to KPFT. Show's put together. We have the guest, and sometimes we have to deal with the guest not showing up or coming late. But we all work together and to try to put the show together as best we can. So that's what we do. What you do is your job is to help support KPFT. And you could support KPFT by calling us at 713-526-5738. Let's just go out to the lobby briefly and see if the phones are ringing. And actually, it sounds really quiet out there.
Yes, it's a little quiet out here.
Very quiet. I don't hear the phones ringing.
No.
The station doesn't ask a lot of us. They just ask us to do our fair share. And our fair share is to ask you to call us at 713-526-5738. And Deborah, why is the show important to you?
Because it gives me something to do on Monday nights. No, that's not it. The show's important to me because I realize how we are a conduit for community. There are people who can listen to the radio. They may be in their car or they may be at home. They can't really be involved in the larger GLBT community, or it's the way they can find out about what's going on so that they can get involved. Part of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community in Houston. It's part of the progressive community in Houston because we mix our culture with politics, with current events, with the community organizations. We're volunteers that come to do the radio show, and we are largely a community of volunteers, such as the people that do the Lesbian Health Initiative and offer services. There's wonderful musicians and artists that come to town, such as Trett Fury and Ann Reed, and we let you know about that. So those are people that also give back to the community. Supporting this station is important. If you're a listener, you're part of making Queer Voices happen is to dial that number, 713-526-5738, and say yes. I mean, think about it. A quarter a day, that adds up to what, about $1.75 a week? $1.75 a week, 52 weeks a year. I mean, we're here. We're going to be here. Hopefully, KPFT has had a longstanding commitment to having queer radio on the air and other programs. There's a diversity where we all respect one another, have that acceptance for one another, as Larry Payne talked about during his show, Interchange. We're diverse, but but we come together in community, and we all support KPFT. We are part of what makes it happen. You do your part by calling 713-526-5738. Jennifer, what's that number?
713-526-KPFT.
And say, yes, I'm going to pledge. I'm going to support Queer Voices. And I appreciate what Jack and Glenn and JD and Deborah and Jennifer and Ellie and Greg and all the other people that contribute to Queer Voices do. I appreciate the work that they put in and what they bring to the Houston community. So show that support by pledging now. You can put it on plastic. That's a really easy thing to do. You can pledge a certain amount per month and pay it out that way, or a one-time thing, as little as $35. There's also pledges that you can make that you can get premiums. So ask the volunteer, our friendly volunteers that answer the phone, what you can do. And so we have raised no money tonight. Nobody's calling us and giving us money, and that's making me feel really bad. Don't make me come down there.
We have zero people to thank.
That feels bad. This is scary.
It is scary because this is the first time ever that we did zero. And I keep looking at this. Zero so far.
Did the transmitter fall down or something? People aren't hearing us?
No, the transmitter did not
fall
down.
They want to hear me cry.
Yeah. I guess.
No, they want to hear you sing.
No, they don't.
I mean, please. The price of a couple of cups of coffee at Starbucks a month is all it would take to make a contribution. It's something simple. Doesn't take much to be...
One cup of coffee at Starbucks a month is enough to...
Well, a double latte, maybe.
Yeah, we're getting really wild.
Venti.
Do your part. Pledge now, 713-526-5738. What do we have to do to get through to you, to make you understand that you are needed? You're the missing element in the pledge drive. If you don't do your part, it makes it really hard for us to do our part. So please call now, 713-526-5738, and we're going to go to Joan.
Now, you can back call to the fertile cornfields of Iowa and the pumpkin-free Joan Devlin.
And speaking of KPFT real quick, I live in Iowa. Trust me. You know how I get my KPFT-type news? By going online and listening to KPFT. We don't have things like that here. And trust me, you will miss it. You miss it so much when you don't have it. KPFT is unbelievable what they're able to do with all volunteer contributions. So please, 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 for those of you who only get KPFT on the Internet, we'll take your pledges too. 526-5738, 713 area code. Call in because KPFT is a jewel. I am Joan Devlin, and I have on the phone with me Jill Marie. Jill Marie had a 10-year, roughly, correspondence with the actress Agnes Moorehead, and since she played Endora on Bewitched, this is an appropriate time to talk about this. Jill has compiled these letters into a book called Agnes and Me. And Jill, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great tonight. It's nice to talk to you.
Now, when I first read your book, the thing that jumped out at me, because I believe you began writing Agnes Moorehead in, like, 66 or 67, is you started talking about how much you loved her. Okay, that's probably a typical type fan letter. Mm-hmm. But then you also talked about how you and a female friend of yours had a huge crush on Agnes Moorehead, just like this crush that you had on this female teacher of yours a year before. And you kind of went into a woman I am in love with thing, which just startled me for you to just kind of open yourself up like that.
Well,
I mean, was that hard for you to do?
Women are wonderful, whether you're gay or straight. They're the best, you know. Mm-hmm.
That's just because in 1967 things were a little different, and, you know, and for you to be that open and then... You know, but the best thing of all is just the fact that she responded to you. It was just like, okay, this is cool. Now, she didn't, you know, obviously didn't talk about anything of a sexual nature. It was strictly a adult speaking to a fan kind of a thing, but it didn't seem to put her off in any way.
No, she really mentored me. I look back at the letters, and she says, such amazing
things. I was going through them today and summarizing them, and I was just amazed how lucky I was, really. She gave me a lot of, even though she didn't talk about her personal life, she really opened herself up to give me advice and react with my life. And what I also thought was interesting was, because this was during the time of Bewitched, so there were obviously many, many fan letters, your letter was answered in a way that let me know they were read. I mean, you know, actual things were responded to, questions, specific instances that you had discussed were commented upon. It kind of was interesting to me because, you know, most people, you know, you send the letter and you pour your heart out, you get, you know, the 8x10 photo and the thanks for writing kind of thing, and you actually didn't get that.
No, I got a lot of feedback, a lot of opinions, even if I didn't want them. She would often admonish me strongly about different things. And some of her letters are pretty long.
And this went on through literally, what, did you say, like a month before her death?
Just a few months before she left Gigi. And at that point, it was really me. I didn't write to her as often as I used to.
Well, tell our audience some of the things that, you know, were discussed and the way they kind of guided you through your life.
Well, I used to draw, and I drew her portrait a lot. I'd send her pictures, and she would comment about if they looked like her or not, and she would always promise to put them in her scrapbook. When I was studying theater, she gave a lot of advice about theater, about a teacher wasn't just name-dropping. He was pointing up style, just countless things that she talked about. And she did react to my personal life very, very much.
Now, what made you decide to put this together? This just was something, you know, you'd had these letters for some time, obviously. The actress passed away in 1974. But what made you decide to kind of come out of the closet with your relationship through letters with this actress?
Well, one day I decided to look for them, see if I still had them. I thought I did, but I was really relieved to see them. And as I went through them with a different perspective, with a middle-aged perspective, I had hardly read them much over the years. It was a whole, almost two generations difference, almost the same age she was. And I saw the letters from such a perspective and that, you know, I maybe at one point took it for granted. And I realized what I had, and it was such an emotional moment that I thought I should do something with them.
And how have the letters continued to kind of, you know, obviously you wrote the book, so they're very much a part of your life, but they've been responsible for you making a couple of pilgrimages to New York and kind of...
Yeah, somebody who bought my book was interested in Agnes's secretary's husband, who played the shadow. Mm-hmm. And I went down to New York and did some research and some archives and where the person lived and took pictures. It was just really fun.
And did you, you know, what more have you learned about yourself as you continue to go through these letters and, you know, even as you were putting, you know, how hard was it to compile them all into a book?
It wasn't really hard for me. I have a natural ability to write, and I had some time. I teach part-time, and I had some time, and I just typed them over and decided to put a context for each one, and it just took me back, and it really wasn't very difficult. It came together pretty quickly, actually.
Now, how can people get the book?
Well, they can get it by going to www.agnesandme.com. It costs $12.95 to download. And you can also contact me at jill9marie@yahoo.com. That's jill9marie@yahoo.com. And I'll give you a free summary of all the letters, which I'm putting up for auction right now. And if anybody buys any of them, I would give them a free ebook.
Now, how hard has it been for you to part with these letters? Because I know you you had brought some of them with you to Salem, and they are precious. But, I mean, how? What made you decide now, after all these years, that it was time to let some of them go?
I guess it was a letting go. It came to a full fruition. life, and I'm not going to let all of them go, but we'll see, you know. It's just time. It's just a time of my life. It's hard to put it in words, but it just feels right at this point to share it with a wider audience. In just the past few days, I've gotten several orders.
So what is the response to the book been so far? It's been out about 6 months now. How have people responded to it?
Well, what I've gotten, they really like the context, the fact that I took myself back in time, and they thought I gave a really good context that was relevant to the book. I wasn't sure how that would go over, you know, would people really care about my life, but it just fit in very well. It meshed. And that's the best piece of feedback I got, that the writing was good. And
what's one of the most valuable lessons you've learned as you've kind of reread these letters, and even as you were kind of going through them, even as you were living them?
Well,
Joan, you have a minute.
Okay. Just the wisdom that she passed on to me. I feel that sometimes I have reached that. Other times I have a long ways to go. I model my life pretty much on values and the depth that she had and not the superficiality, and I do try to mentor people also.
Well, great. Give us your website one more time before we have to let you go.
Mm-hmm. Sorry?
Give us your website where we can get the book one more time.
www.agnesandmeoneword.com.
Great. Thank you. We've been talking to Jill Marie. She's the author of Agnes and Me, which is a story of her life as lived through the letters of the actress Agnes Moorehead.
Thank you very much, Joan, and everybody. Good night.
Good night, and thank you, Joan, and happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
And you are listening to Queer Voices, and of course here we are on KPFT, and it's fundraising time, and it's time for everyone who is listening and enjoying the show to participate by calling in your pledge of support at 713-526-5738.
And I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed.
Well, you should be.
I'm very embarrassed.
let me turn your mic.
If I had my clothes off, you'd all be embarrassed.
Turn on some mics.
Okay, I've got your mics on now.
This is the first time ever that we're batting zero. I mean,
well, actually, we did have a pledge, actual payment, I believe.
Yes, somebody went out there. I believe always put your money where your mouth is.
And so Jennifer has made a generous pledge to the show tonight. But you know, it shouldn't be just us that work on the show. It should be our listening audience. And well, what's scaring me is maybe we don't have a listening audience. I mean, people tell me they heard me on the radio, but maybe they're just saying that to be nice or something.
They're just being polite.
Yeah. So, really, please call 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT.
And, you know, we really try to make these pledge parts to the minimum. We try to do a full program, even during pledge drive, so that there's something to listen to. There's something besides us just asking for money. I mean, we've actually had four interviews tonight, right? Four?
Mm-hmm.
Well, four different local segments. And
we had all of This Way Out.
Right. And we all...
Music.
And... And, you know, everybody contributed to the show tonight, which is really great. And none of us are stars. We're not here to be stars.
Oh, speak for yourself.
Well, that's what I tell you. You're not
Diva here. Excluded.
Yes, that's you're not right. Here to be stars.
We're not stars.
No, we're here basically to put our guests are the stars. They're the ones that we want on to be able to talk about what's going on in the community, what's important to them, what organization they're involved in. And we all talk about some of the other organizations we're involved in because we think it's important about what's going on. And we just have a few minutes left, and unlike the old days, we don't go on for 20 minutes after the show's over because we have to get out for the next show to come on.
And that reminds me, Jack, between now and November 3rd, people can early vote. And there are several voting locations around town from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
till Friday.
Look it up at www.harrisvotes.org. And that's a really important thing to do, because I'm scared what will happen if the right thing, the right candidates don't get in. So
right, please, or those machines are
right.
fixed.
And I'm also very frightened by the fact that all those spooks and goblins are coming out tomorrow night. But I'm even more scared that our listeners are not supporting us. So please, I really would like to hear that phone ring. So I would want to hear at least four phones ring at 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. Probably a lot of them have been out in Sugar Land protesting Bush.
Or stuck in traffic around.
I'm sure there's some good reasons, but the
you can use your cell phone from the car where you're stuck in traffic.
Yes, or you can pull over on the side of the road or into a parking lot. Do everything safely, because the driving is the most important thing when you're at the wheel. But do call 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. Call with your pledge of support. You can do as little as you can afford to do, or as much as you can afford to do. You can put it on plastic. You can make a monthly pledge. You can do a one-time payment.
You can walk in with cash.
We'll take your money gladly.
Right. You can even do estate planning.
You can. That's true.
Yeah.
You can. If you come down to the station, it's best to come during business hours during the day. But call 713-526-5738. Say, I support Queer Voices. I support KPFT. Thank you for the hard work everyone does. And we'll appreciate your participation in keeping Queer Voices on the air. Because I'm one of the Queer Voices, and Jennifer, what are you?
Well, I'm one of the voices, too. And that's one of the important things you need to remember. We are your radio station. We speak for you. You don't hear what you hear on other stations that you hear here. We can put on the things you want to hear. We give you the announcements. We tell you what's going on and report to you what's going on in our community. So, without us here, where would you get the information? Come, call up. Donate, be part of Queer Voices, be part of KPFT. So call 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
And stay tuned for World Village Cafe coming up next. Been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Polinski. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.